Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the Worldbeat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African highlife, Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin' Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.
This is Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
Coming up the rest of this morning on KBOO at 11 on Between the Covers, Lisa Loving welcomes back Gregory Pardlow to talk about his new book, Air Traffic. At 11:30, Black Book Talk welcomes librarian Patricia Hurd Hobson to discuss the best books they've ever read. But next, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you want to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
Today on Flashpoints, an exclusive interview with Pablo Alvarado, who has been called the Cesar Chavez of the day labor movement. Alvarado is about to embark on a cross-country caravan for freedom. The caravan will be led by people who have temporary protected status based on credible human rights claims. We'll also feature excerpts of the new documentary, When Banana Ruled, about the oppressive history of Chiquita Banana and the CIA in Central America. I mean, you talk about intervention in other people's elections. Study the CIA. All this coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And we continue to track the racist government of Donald Trump, particularly having to do with brown people in this country, undocumented workers, and the like. And joining us to continue this dialogue is Pablo Alvarado. He is the executive director of Endelon. That's the National Day Labor Organizing Network. Pablo Alvarado, welcome back. I know you're about to go into a major meeting, but let me get your assessment. The government was supposed to put all those families back together by last week. The judge has given them until Thursday. Your thoughts on what the situation looks like and your response to what happened here?
Well, I think it's probably an impossibility for the government to comply with the court order. By Thursday, they are supposed to reunite, I believe, 900 families, kids that were separated from their parents. And the problem is that they have no idea where the parents are, you know. So I don't think that they will comply with the court order by Thursday. And this obviously will increase the agony of these families, of the kids who have been traumatized by this grotesque abuse.
Grotesque abuse, yes it is. Yeah. And talk a little bit more about that. How would you characterize, what does this signify and signal about the U.S. government and their relationship to what will soon be a white, if it isn't already, a white minority America?
Well, it is very clear the motivations of this administration to go after essentially people of color. They are definitely not targeting undocumented immigrants from Canada and Europe. Their goal is to bring down the number of non-white immigrants in the country. And not just undocumented, but people with documents. If you think about it, TPS holders and the young people who have DACA, they are the ones who are losing their documents. So it's not just an attack about the undocumented, it's an attack against the documented. And they have initiated an effort to even denaturalize people who have become U.S. citizens. So the trend of this attack is very clear. First of all, they said, we are going to go after people who have committed crimes. And that was the good news. The bad news that at the same time that they were using this rhetoric, felons, not families, criminals, not families, they were criminalizing everybody. So the good news for undocumented people is that, you know, the administration has said that they're going to go after criminals. The bad news is that everyone is a criminal in the eyes of this administration. So, you know, even undocumented people began distancing themselves from people who in their mind were perceived as criminals. But that's what they said first. And then they went after the undocumented. They even said, you know, because during the Obama administration, there were priorities, there were categories, you know, and one of those categories was, you know, undocumented people who have not committed crimes were not a priority, at least in terms of rhetoric. In practice, undocumented people have always been persecuted, but this administration has been more grotesque in that sense, you know. So first they said the criminals, then the undocumented, and then they're going after the people who have documents. That includes TPS holders, that includes youth who are beneficiaries of DACA and legal permanent residents. And now they're preparing the conditions to denaturalize, to take away the citizenship of people who, in their perspective, have lied when they have applied for citizenship. So you can see that this administration is simply not interested in fixing the so-called broken immigration system. Their interest is to bring down the number of non-white Americans precisely because they are afraid of the emergency of a non-white majority.
Trump announced that he's willing to shut down the government to get the wall. He is going to the wall for the wall, if you want to look at it that way. What's your response to that kind of statement, that kind of attitude? It really does demonstrate a certain kind of resolve and a certain kind of deep racism at the same time.
Well, you know, I mean, he's speaking to his base. The Republican Party at this moment is deeply divided about his politics, not just the local policies, but the international policies. The Republicans are very afraid of the trade war that he has initiated, the fact that he has alienated the European allies of the United States. You know, the Republicans are divided about all of these issues. But there's one thing that brings them together, and that is the hatred of his base for immigrants and for Muslims. So the minute that they said immigrants, they all come together. So he is appeasing his base. He's talking to his base. It's obviously dangerous talk. It's having an impact. It's poisoning the hearts and minds of many people. And I don't know how reversible that is, you know. But we're going to be stuck with a lot of people whose hearts and minds have been polluted with hatred and racism. And it appears that this segment of followers, fanatics, of extremists that Mr. Trump has are fully determined in their war of attrition against immigrants. It appears that their hatred and racism is so deep-seated that they're willing to do whatever it takes to make sure that they implement their agenda. But Mr. Trump is definitely talking to that segment of the population who believe that immigrants pose a threat to whatever definition that they have of America. You know, so that's the reality. The actual motivations of this administration is bigotry. It's racism. You know, it's discrimination. Marginalization, it's fear. You can characterize it in any number of ways, but at the end of the day, Mr. Trump supporters are people who are fearful, fearful of immigrants and fearful, in the way they put it, fearful of the unknown, because they don't know us. But the solution to that is actually a conversation, a dialogue, it's understanding, you know. So we're going to be engaging in that process of dialogue with some of these folks, you know, whomever wants to talk. But I do think that there's got to be some sort of conversation, at least with a rational segment of anti-immigrant, you know, individuals in this country. There's got to be a dialogue.
Well, and that's exactly what I want to talk to you about. I believe you are part of the creation of a program that's going to go just about every part of this country, and you're going to open that dialogue eye to eye in the heartlands, everywhere you can find people to dialogue with. You want to talk about that kind of strategy that you're a part of now?
Yes, essentially there will be a group of TPS holders. TPS stands for Temporary Protected Status, and this is a congressionally mandated program that is part of the immigration law that allows the President of the United States the discretion to grant temporary protected status to protect people from deportation and for people to have a work permit. This permit is usually granted to individuals who live in the United States, but whose countries have gone through extreme political violence or, you know, devastating natural disasters. Some of the countries that are beneficiaries of this program include El Salvador, with over 200,000 people, Honduras, Haiti, Nepal, Somalia, Syria, Nicaragua. So these are countries that in one way or another have benefited from this program, and the Trump administration has decided to end it. And in some cases, you know, folks have had this temporary protected status for over 20 years. And in these 20 years, they have done everything the society has asked from them. They have paid taxes. You know, they've been told that if you want to remain in compliance with this program, you have to hold a job, pay taxes, do a criminal background check every 18 months, pay a fine of $100, et cetera, you know. So they have done everything that they have been asked by this society. And yet, Mr. Trump is taking away the TPS. And one of the most difficult aspects of this situation is that there are 400,000, beneficiaries of this program, and they have procreated 274,000 U.S. children. These are Americans. These are U.S. citizens. So imagine what the separation of 2,300 kids from their family, from their parents, did to this country. It brought the country into a deep humanitarian and crisis of morality, an ethical crisis of ethics. Well, just imagine what's going to happen with 274,000 kids being separated from their TPS parents. That's exactly what's coming. So, the TPS holders, rather than succumbing to fear, they have decided to, you know, get on a bus and speak up and raise their voice and tell Mr. Trump, we've done everything that this society has asked from us, and yet you want to get rid of us and our children, and we're not going to go quietly into the night. So about 50 leaders and TPS holders will go around the country for 12 weeks telling their stories, interacting with legislators, you know, with union members, with community centers, local churches. So for 12 weeks, they're going to travel the country in a bus called Libertad. You know, so they're going to go throughout the West Coast, the middle of the country, and then the East Coast for 12 weeks, telling their stories. And the idea is that they're going to ask Mr. Trump to meet with them. We want Mr. Trump to meet and see directly into the eyes of the people that he is going to separate and then later deport. So we want to make sure that petition goes out. So the TPS holders are embarking in this effort you know, to again to save the TPS program, to let the country know what's coming, that they are next in terms of the separation of families. But the most, one of the very important messages that they're carrying with them is that they want to remove the fear that Americans, that a segment of Americans have towards immigrants, you know. So they want to show the country that they're not afraid, and that they are acting from a perspective of love and peace, and that they want to make sure that they stay in their adopted homeland. These are folks that have grown deep roots in our country. The people, 30% are homeowners, you know. Almost 90% of them are employed, have a job. You know, these are well-established individuals, you know, who are necessary for many of the industry, for the construction industry, for the trucking industry. Just for example, just here in Los Angeles, in the port, in the Long Beach port, there are about 14,000 truck drivers. These are the folks that transport the wealth that comes through the ships to the port, to the mainland. Well, guess what? 2,000 of those 14,000 truck drivers are TPS holders. So they're essential for that. Imagine how are they going to replace those workers. These are people who have given the best years of their lives. Some of them came when they were like 20, 22. I am actually a former TPS holder. You know, we came when we were young and we've given the best years of our lives to the employers here. So we've developed incredible skills. All of these skills will be lost. You know, so they want to remind the country that it should be that they, you know, that